It's Friday, October 10th, 2008, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast. I'm Mike Dell, filling in for Todd while he's on vacation with his family in Southern California, and we hope he's having a great time. He twittered earlier that he needed another week off to recover from the vacation, so it sounds like they're keeping him busy. I guess he goes on the road afterwards, so maybe that'll give him some time to relax. So, anyway, live as it can be from sunny northern Michigan. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
And as I said before, Todd is on vacation. This is Mike Dell from MikeDell.com. A little bit about me. I live here in northern Michigan, Traverse City to be specific. So we're enjoying one of the last sunny days, I'm sure, of the year, or at least sunny and warm. And I guess if you consider 60 degrees warm, but anyway, it's nice and warm here in the studio. You might hear the furnace kick on once in a while. I don't have a completely soundproof studio here, but we'll try to muddle through. Anyway, Geek News Central is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. Use Todd20 as a promo code for 20% off 1 year of shared hosting over at GoDaddy.com. And I did that for my sites. GoDaddy has a really good hosting package and everything else, even with podcasting and everything. And it's great. There's a whole bunch of other codes here. You can find those over at geeknewscentral.com. For instance, the code Todd, T-O-D-D, saves you about 10% on any order. Code Geek will save you $5 off of any order of $30 or more. And there's a few more over there, so go check those out. And it's also sponsored by GoToMeeting. The link to that would be over there on the website. But basically, you go to gotomeeting.com/techpodcast, and you can, you get a 30-day, I think it is, 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting. I just used GoToMeeting this morning to talk with a guy in Florida who is doing some web work for the company I work for. So that'll, I've had experience with it. I love it. It's really easy, but anyway, the more official-sounding ads will be on other podcasts, and the link's over at the site. Please check it out. It'll help support this show and every other show. I'm actually kind of nervous, to be honest with you. This was one of the first podcasts that I ever listened to, along with Adam Curry and I think Trucker Tom. I think those were the three. This one, Adam Curry and Trucker Tom were the first three, and shortly thereafter I started my podcast. So anyway, I do a daily podcast with my wife, who does most of the writing. I do most of the talking. It's called Strange Today over at strangetoday.com. So I'm not used to these long-form ones. Ours is usually 2 to 5 minutes long at the most. So anyway, let's get on with some of the content. And like I said, I'd like to thank Mike James over at MikeThinksNews.com, who hosted Tuesday, for sending me some of these stories. Of course, I dug around and found some other great stories. And one of my favorite ones here, you may have heard it if you've listened to other podcasts, but I think it's worth mentioning over here. Google actually is trying to make Gmail harder to use. What you say? Anyway, this is from Ars Technica, is at least where I got it. It's called Google Goggles. Kind of like beer goggles. And actually, this is sort of like anti-beer goggles. Basically, what they do is, it's on the Gmail site there under Google Labs. You can turn this on, and by default, it allows you to set it up to where if you send an email out on a Friday or Saturday night, it makes you answer some math questions within 60 seconds so that it can see whether you're sober or not. That's so you don't mail your ex-boyfriend, girlfriend, or mess with your boss or whatever after you've had a little bit too much to drink. Of course, none of us would do that. But anyway, of course, I'll have a link in the show notes to that. But I don't know, you know. Every time I've sent off a stupid email, I've been sober. So anyway, I thought that was quite funny. Let's see. What do we got next? Judge reviews decision barring sale of DVD copying software. Of course, you've probably heard of the Reel.com or Reel Player, Reel DVD product that basically lets you rip DVDs to your hard drive, of course with lots of DRM, so that you can watch it without putting the DVD in there. Well, the judge ruled earlier that Reel Networks couldn't sell the DVD copying software. And anyway, she reviewed it again and continued with the ban on selling it. And she's U.S. District Judge Marilyn Hall Patel. And she was the judge that was presiding over the Napster litigation long time ago. But she, on Tuesday, compelled Reel Networks, I got to read this here, compelled Reel Networks to inform customers on its website that due to recent legal action taken by Hollywood Movie Studios against Reel DVD, it is temporarily unavailable. And that's from the Motion Picture Association of America, which is, I guess, the movie version of the RIAA. And I don't know why they don't like this. This thing's so full of DRM and stuff. You know, you can't do anything with it except for watch it yourself. Well, you know, it's okay. You don't have the little plastic disc with you. I really don't understand what their problem is, and hopefully Reel DVD will get back in business, I guess. You know, I really don't have a use for it. I'll just bring the disc if I want to watch a movie, or more than likely nowadays I'd probably just rent a movie from iTunes. You know, once you've seen a movie, do you really need to see it again and again and again and again? And, you know, I certainly don't give it away if I get it electronically. Of course, you can't with iTunes or Netflix or any of those. So I really don't get why they're so upset about it. I mean, really, you watch the thing and then you give the disc to somebody else. What's the difference? They're not buying it again, but I don't know. Anyway, and speaking of Netflix, Netflix is imposing a $1 per month Blu-ray surcharge. And I don't have a Blu-ray player. I'm sure some of you guys do out there, guys, gals, whatever. But if you're a member of Netflix and you have some Blu-ray discs in your queue, Netflix is going to give you an extra dollar on your bill. Isn't that nice of them? Let's see. Here's the mail or the email that they sent out to their customers. It says, "Dear customer, as you know, Blu-ray movies are more expensive than standard definition movies. As a result, we're going to start charging $1 a month plus applicable taxes in addition to your monthly membership charge for monthly access to Blu-ray movies." I thought one of the selling points of Netflix was that they had Blu-ray and they had HD DVD before the format war got over. I personally never got into either one of them. Plain old DVDs are good enough for me right now. So that's kind of a bummer for you Netflix people. So, let's see. More entertainment digital media news. Let's see here. It says, Steve Wozniak predicts the death of the iPod. Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, better known in the industry as Woz, believes that the iPod is on its way out and has revealed his discomfort with some of the aspects of the iPhone. That's over at VNUnet.com. There'll be a link in the show notes. But he told the Daily Telegraph that the iPod is on its way out, just like the transistor radios, Walkmans. You know, they kind of die out after a while. And he also didn't like the iPhone being so proprietary and is actually looking forward to Google's Android platform. Any of you guys out there pre-order a G1? I know Todd was talking about getting one. And it looks very interesting. Well, I'm kind of hooked on my Crackberry. Or I mean Blackberry. And it does all right, but it's sort of closed up and slow. So I'll have to see what the Android platform has to offer. I certainly use enough other Google services, so that wouldn't be too much of a stretch. Here's another story. Not really a story, it's a book that I found interesting. I know a lot of geeks, like I consider myself a geek, are into ham radio or into radios in general. Well, there was a book that's just coming out called, let's see, let me get this right. Okay, here we go. It's 50 Years of Amateur Radio Innovation, Transmitters, Receivers, and Transceivers from 1930 to 1980, which many people call the Golden Age of Ham Radio. That's over at the American Radio Relay League Library. But it gives you a guided tour of more than 400 of these legendary radios, lovingly restored by their owners and generously photographed by Joe Verras, and his ham radio call sign's K9OCO. He's a professional photographer and an extra-class ham radio operator. But anyway, he tells the story about all these radios, and he took the last photograph 13 years ago. So the book's been a long time in the making. I'm looking forward to getting my copy of it. There'll be a link to that in the show notes. Let's see. Creepy clickjacking bug lets hackers control webcams. Software maker Adobe issued a security advisory Tuesday warning users of the Adobe Flash Player, which is basically everybody, about a vulnerability that could expose them to so-called clickjacking attacks. Adobe has rated the issue as critical. The vulnerability is pervasive, affecting all major browsers, including Microsoft's Internet Explorer, Apple's Safari, and Mozilla's Firefox. They didn't mention Google Chrome. But anyway, while Adobe has not issued a patch for the bug, it included a workaround in the advisory. The company hopes to address the vulnerability in an upcoming Flash Player update scheduled for release by the end of October. So those of you that have the Flash Player and a webcam, you might want to unplug the webcam for a while. I personally am not worried because my webcam doesn't really see anything other than my ugly mug when I'm sitting in front of it or the wall here in the studio. Or Ham Shack, too, actually. So, anyway, so that was over at TechNewsWorld.com. And, as I say every time, link will be in the show notes. So, hey, there's a new BlackBerry coming. It's called the BlackBerry Storm. And, of course, everybody's saying it's the next iPod killer, just like every other phone that comes out. But anyway, it's going to be on Verizon, and it's touch screen. I don't know. I like the keyboard on my BlackBerry, so I don't know if I'd like that touch screen part of it. According to RIM, it's a quote, "This is an important device. It shows how RIM is attempting to expand It's Market, from the corporate enterprise blue pinstripe suit, focus on a larger audience, and wants to take advantage of those high-end devices. And that was from the vice president of mobile strategy at Jupiter Media. So anyway, it's playing into the consumer market. I use a BlackBerry, and I don't use it for work necessarily, although it has come in handy for work. I kind of agree with this other part in the article. It says, just putting a touchscreen on a phone doesn't mean success, or it'll even tap into the iPhone enthusiasm. What RIM is doing is putting their own spin on it, keeping focus on what it has typically done best by providing differentiated experience. That's definitely a corporate speak there. But anyway, should be interesting. I'll have to check it out. Has a 360 by 480 resolution touchscreen, although a bit smaller than the iPhone's 3.5-inch screen. Storm offers something that Apple's handset does not: tactile feedback. And this was the most interesting part. With the Storm, it's developed touch technology that gives slightly when a user touches the screen. I don't know what that means, gives slightly. Or does it push back, or does it shock you? Anyway, it gives you a feeling of a key on a physical keyboard or a button on a mouse being depressed. I don't know. Unless it sort of pushes back, I don't know. I have to try it out. So anyway, and it has one thing that the iPhone doesn't. It has cut and paste. So that's great. I think that would be, it might be kind of cool. Like I said, I like having physical buttons, and I don't mind having a small screen on the BlackBerry. My 14-year-old has an iPod Touch, and I've tried typing on it before, and I have no luck. So anyway, let's see what I got here next. Now, this story over on ZDNet, of course it's more Mac-related news, but this one caught my eye. It's how a Mac Mini beat a quad-core Vista machine. So I like the headline. Anyway, QuickTime for Windows is slow, but VLC works. And the Mac Mini with a 1.66 megahertz processor and 512 megs of RAM beat the quad-core Vista machine. And let's see here. Got to look this up. Basically what it was, they were trying to play a 1080p H.264 QuickTime movie. And they tried to play it on a big old quad-core Vista machine, and it was herky-jerky and all that. And the guy had a Mac Mini, just a little 166 Mac Mini. Didn't say here whether that's a PowerPC version or a Intel version. But it just goes to show you that QuickTime for Windows is definitely not up to par with QuickTime for Apple. Of course, Apple wouldn't have as much motivation to make it work as good on Windows, I wouldn't think, just because, they want to get people to switch over to the Mac. I use Mac, Windows, I even have a Linux box here with Ubuntu on it. Currently I'm using a Vista machine to record this show, but I have used the Mac to record shows. It's okay, but when it comes to video, QuickTime on Windows doesn't work all that well. As I said at the beginning of the story there, VLC for the Windows does work, although it still wasn't as good as the lowly Mac Mini. So, I don't know. I've got a Mac Mini here, and I think it's kind of slow, but I don't know, I've never really tried to play 1080p video on it, so I'll have to go try that. I know my MacBook does all right with it. So, let's see, let's get into some legal news here. Gotta find the story here. Here we go. The guy that broke into Sarah Palin's email was indicted by a federal jury in Knoxville, Tennessee. His name's David Cornell, 20-year-old University of Tennessee student. He was indicted on one count of breaking into a personal Yahoo email account of Alaska Governor and Republican Vice Presidential candidate Sarah Palin. Cornell faces up to 5 years and a $250,000 fine for accessing Palin's email. So, anyway, and he's supposed to be a son of a Democrat senator or Democrat politician in Tennessee. So, I don't know. Seems kind of fishy to me. Of course, after he heard of the indictment, I figured you had to be there for an indictment, but I guess not. Upon hearing of the indictment, Cornell turned himself into authorities. At an arraignment, he pled not guilty and was released on bond. According to the Associated Press, a trial is set for December 16th. And let's see, a spokesman for Senator John McCain described the incident as deeply troubling and a blatant violation of the law. Well, no doubt. But on the other hand, it just goes to show you that Yahoo email isn't as secure as it should be. If somebody can go in there and change the password, that's how he did it. He changed the password using some easily guessable information about Governor Palin. So hopefully the governor and other politicians have learned a lesson about that, and I'm sure this guy will learn a lesson too. Let's hope so, because that's really uncalled for. I don't mean to be picking on Apple News here, but this is part of the rumor mill. This was over at ZDNet also. Apple is set to release an $800 notebook. According to the source, Apple retail stores have been given price sheets that list 12 price points for a new range, with prices ranging between $800 and $3,100. Current lines only have 8 price points, 3 MacBooks, 3 MacBook Pros, and 2 MacBook Airs. According to the source, retail outlets usually get the price list about 10 days before products hit the market. Technical specs for the new laptops were not included in the price sheet. And what I've heard is the new MacBook Pro is somehow going to be fashioned out of a brick of aluminum, you know, one piece aluminum, you know, instead of a stamped piece. So that should be interesting. Although I have heard that Wi-Fi performance on aluminum notebooks or titanium notebooks from Apple, at least, don't have the range that the plastic ones do. And my MacBook's just a plain old plastic MacBook, so, and I'm really impressed with the range on it. And I forget who I heard say they're calling the new MacBook Pro, made out of the brick of aluminum, the MacBook Brick. That's kind of the wrong name for a laptop, I would think. Might be a good doorstop. Of course, you know, it's a Mac, it should work fine, but hopefully they get the antenna thing worked out. That's kind of the reason behind the iPhone second generation going to a plastic back. It makes it easier for the antenna, both for Wi-Fi and for the GSM, 3G, whatever the network's called. So, let's see here. Sorry to ramble on, but this is all new to me. Ever heard of Esther Dyson? I wonder if she's any relation to the Dyson that makes the vacuum cleaners. Anyway, she's paying, $3 million to go through cosmonaut training in Russia as a backup for billionaire space flyer Charles Simoli. And Simoli went up one time before. And Esther Dyson's going to be the backup. She's paying her way through the cosmonaut training by herself. But she's brushing up on her Russian and hopes to fly to the International Space Station aboard the Soyuz. Jeez, English optional today. So, anyway, wish her luck. I don't know if I'd pay $3 million unless I had a definite seat. Of course, that's a moot point because I don't have $3 million. Wish I did. Another space news. The Mars Phoenix lander is digging and analyzing soil as darkness gathers. As fall approaches Mars, Northern Plains, NASA's Phoenix lander continues to dig on the red planet soil and deliver samples to its onboard science instruments for analysis. And I guess here pretty soon there won't be enough sun to replenish the batteries on the Phoenix lander. I've been following the Phoenix lander on Twitter. I'll put a link in the show notes to the Twitter address. I don't remember it right offhand, but the last Twitter I got was that the Mars lander may have to quit using its arm due to diminishing power reserves. It's just amazing that they can control something like that on Mars. The last time I tried to mess with a remote control anything, I couldn't control it 100 yards away. And therefore turned a model airplane into a pile of toothpicks with an engine. But we got it repaired and getting better at it. Anyway, that was over at spaceref.com. Ever wonder why your mobile phone can alert you to a new voicemail without ever having rung? That and many other things are over at tidbits.com. And it's peering inside the mobile phone network. And it's a pretty comprehensive webpage explaining how the different phone systems work and how you can jump from tower to tower or cell to cell and not drop a call, and how using a cell phone in an airplane would work, and just a whole bunch of things. And like I said, that's over at tidbits.com, and it's pretty interesting. So let's see, some more space news, and combined with amateur radio news. In June 2009, the Chinese will launch an amateur radio satellite. Michael Chen, BD5RD, reports that the first Chinese amateur radio satellite has been renamed from CAS-1 to XW-1 and is planned for launch next June. And AMSAT, which is an amateur radio satellite organization, says he talked to a guy over there, and the first satellite is going smoothly. Let's see here. It's supposed to have a beacon on 3 crossband transponders, one on FM, one linear, I don't know what that means, and digital. The satellite's planned launch of June 2009 aboard a CZ-2C rocket from the Space Center in North China. And let's see, if you've got a police scanner and you want to listen to this thing once it goes up, the linear transponder will be transmitting on 435 megahertz even, 435.000. Most programmable police scanners will have that in there. Actually, all the frequencies for all the transponders. So the FM transponder will probably be interesting to listen to, although you'll hear probably a lot of Chinese, but, you know, it's going to be passing over various parts of the world, and when it's over the United States, you'll hear generally United States, Canada, and Mexico amateurs on there, so that might be kind of interesting. They're also going to do a beacon on CW, which is another name for Morse code, so if you like to listen to dots and dashes, give it a check out sometime in June. And that frequency, again, is 435.0 megahertz. If, like I said, if you got a police scanner, just throw that frequency in there, and nothing will happen while it's, you know, when nothing's up there, but as it passes over, you might hear something. It's pretty interesting. I didn't know the Chinese were doing amateur satellites. The United States and other countries around the world have put up several of them. I think there might be up to 30 different amateur satellites. I'll throw a link in for AMSAT, that organization, and it'll give you a little more info on that. But most police scanners or shortwave radios can listen to the various satellites, and it is kind of geeky, so I figured it fit this show. So let me see here. I think I might be to the end of my stories already. That's not right. gotta double check here. Yeah, I think that's about it. So I'm running a little short here at 30 minutes. I didn't get any emails or voicemails to play in this show. Okay, I think I'm going to call this a podcast. It's been a pleasure being your guest host, and I, as well as you, look forward to Todd returning next Tuesday night for show number 416. You can leave comments on the voicemail line at 619-342-7365, or you can leave an email at geeknews@gmail.com. And be sure to visit the website at geeknewscentral.com. There's a lot of interesting stuff there, not only the podcasts, but a whole lot of other posts and other information about various things that Todd and company are into. And as Todd would say to the Ohana, or the family in Hawaiian, aloha from Northern Michigan.